It's got a death curse.
So it's bothering me like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
I'm going to lay this on the line right now. If anyone gets offended listening to this show, it's all Nude's fault.
For the record, the homework we had to do for this podcast was the absolute worst assignment. 3 hours of my life that will never be returned to me.
This is unlike any show we've done before.
And there's a movie out there that's going to scare the shit out of you, but it ain't going to be this show. It's not going to be on this show, that's for damn sure.
Have an accident? Probably just needs a Band-Aid.
Okay, the fucking giant Band-Aid. After the fucking giant Band-Aid, that was it.
Yeah,
they're on something here. Come on, boys, what is it? Come on, we got him now. Let's go.
You're watching it, you're like, can they smell the Down syndrome?
Yeah.
You're like, oh.
Wow, that's dark even for me. I was
like, look about you. It's all mine.
You're being instruction on Delta City.
Take it down. Take it. Take the fucking elephant.
Fucking bitch, take the elephant and rage. Dark man, rage.
I wonder if that's... Oh, God. They're running away.
A doctor in the house.
Fuck you, movie. Go right to hell. Don't pass go. Right to hell.
I went to the show to fucking see this thing. I paid money to go see it on the big screen.
We want the memorandum.
Should your houseboy's predicament not jog your memory, you may bid him Godspeed.
No foolish heroics, if you please.
It's our pleasure to usher you into this episode with a track from John Carpenter's new album coming out April 15th. It's called Lost Themes 2. You can pre-order it now, so get on that. A bunch of us are going to see Mr. Carpenter at the Masonic Temple in Michigan, July 15th. They're going to open the show by screening Escape from New York, and then after that, John Carpenter and his crew are going to come out and play some of his movie-themed music live for the audience. I cannot wait for this show. It's going to be awesome. So as you probably guessed by now, this episode of Horror 101 is going to be off the wall. We got word that Larry Drake passed away recently, so that gave us a reason to revisit an old Sam Raimi favorite of ours, which was Darkman. Plus, we get to showcase one of the worst horror films ever to come out of the 90s, like really bad, called Dr. Giggles. And it gave us an opportunity to finally see an old made-for-TV horror film from 1981 that none of us had seen, called Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. All three films featuring Larry Drake. So the world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson, and myself are presenting you with this episode that we're calling The Dark Man Night of the Giggling Scarecrow. As soon as we test our recording equipment.
Testing.
Test it again.
One, two.
Test it again. Fucking stupid. Fuck. Shit.
But before we get started, we couldn't believe the horror homages stuffed into Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Eight, particularly the similarities between it and John Carpenter's The Thing. We're going to keep any spoilers down to a minimum, but we felt compelled to share with you some of our thoughts on that film.
This here is Daisy Domergue. She's wanted dead or alive for murder. $10,000. That money's mine, boys. Don't want to share it. I ain't going to lose it. When that sun comes out, I'm taking this woman into Red Rock to hang. Is there anybody here committed to stopping me from doing that?
I didn't know anything about the production of Hateful Eight. All I knew is that there was going to be a Western film that starred Kurt Russell. And when I think Western and Kurt Russell, I immediately think Tombstone. What a fucking fantastic Absolutely. Movie that is. And this one was going to be directed by Quentin Tarantino, who loves gratuitous violence. So when we watched it and Ennio Morricone was doing the score, I'm like, oh, check that fucking shit out. That's pretty wild. And as soon as I see Ennio Morricone, and I think he did the music for the old westerns back in like the 60s and spaghetti 70s. Westerns, yeah. Plus, he also did one of the only John Carpenter films where John Carpenter didn't do the score was The Thing in 82. Morricone did the score for that movie. And there's even a part in Hateful Eight where they're using music from The Thing. It's not music made by the same guy who did the music for The Thing. It's the same music from The Thing.
When the handbill says dead or alive, the rest of us shoot you in the back, up on top of a perch somewhere and bring you in dead over saddle. But when John Roof, the hangman, catches you, you don't have no bullet in the back. Mm-mm. When the hangman catches you, you hang.
And the horror references in Hateful Eight almost had me falling out of my chair. When Michael Madsen is chasing that one guy down with the gun, and they're playing David Hess's music from Last House on the Left, and they played that song in the exact same context where the villains are bearing down very slowly and methodically on a good character to kill them. And that's exactly what's going on, and they're playing that music. I'm like, oh my god, why is that there? What an homage, because Hess had just passed away a couple years ago. So I'm thinking to myself, Tarantino is a Last House on the Left fan. It blew my mind. For anybody who hasn't seen Hateful Eight, if you're a fan of The Thing, it's probably the best remake or retelling of that story that you could possibly ever want. And it's a Western, and it's violent, and it's just it's a fantastic movie.
You gotta raise an eyebrow when you see Greg Nicotero attached to the makeup effects for a Western.
Yeah, those are kind of the hallmarks of a Tarantino film. There's going to be a lot of talking, and at least at some point in the movie, one person is going to be drenched head to toe in blood.
Yeah.
You keep talking, Pete. You're going to talk yourself to death.
The first, and I don't want to give away any of the spoilers for people who still haven't seen it, but when the first poison victim goes down, I won't say who, was there a part of you thinking, the curse of the hag?
Curse of the hag! If I lie, may my tongue be... curse of the hag! Of course, most people are probably listening to this right now going, who the fuck is Larry Drake? And that's a good question. Don't feel bad about yourself that you don't know these things, because Larry Drake hasn't done fuck all since 2009.
Do the hell. He was an acting coach for all, did a lot of voiceover work. Best known to audiences is Benny the Intern on L.A. Law, a role that he won 2 Emmys for.
Fuck, most of our listeners ain't gonna... They're not even gonna know what L.A. Law was.
Our generation would.
The only reason I knew about the show is because I lived with my grandparents when I was a kid. And they watched the show.
The only time I ever saw anything relating to L.A. Law was at my grandparents' place.
See? Yeah.
You had to stay up pretty late to watch it.
Do we know why he died yet?
Star Trek.
No. God, why did we look that up?
Consult the Oracle on the death of Larry Drake. When did we hear it? Thursday?
Yeah.
I think we were playing...
He had health problems for a while. That's why he stepped out of kind of public life. He became an acting coach since 2009, and he had been doing only voiceover work. But a lot of prominent shows. He was in Justice League. He was in Superman. He was in Johnny Bravo. I think some of the other really big ones. Batman Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So it did a lot of DC voiceover work.
You know, we're always saying, considering the movies that we've watched in preparation for this podcast, we're always telling our listeners this is Horror 101, where we educate your fears. And there's a movie out there that's going to scare the shit out of you, but it ain't going to be this show. It's not going to be on this show, that's for damn sure. I guarantee you this will be a funny show, and people are going to be laughing at this one.
Unless you're terrified by really bad cinema, the prospect of watching a bad movie scares you, then... Wow, we got a couple of good ones for you.
Tonight, Tonight, on the CBS Saturday Night Movies, this gentle man saved this little girl's life, but they accused him of harming her.
We'll do this ourselves.
And he was tragically murdered. Now, one by one, the men of this town are dying. Who is his avenger? Is it the dead man's grief-stricken mother?
They killed my boy!
The little girl who loved him.
I know what you did to Baba.
Or could it be the Scarecrow? Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, coming up next.
What's the story? You got this 36-year-old man who's slow. That's Larry Drake. He's befriended this little girl. You're given an idea that something might have happened between him and another youth at a time. They kind of hint to something, that some sort of transgression right. that happened in the past. And, of course, everybody, you know, pitchforks and torches. Oh, what happens if this, that, and the other thing?
We were watching, and I mentioned that the plot was very similar, actually, to Straw Dogs. I don't know. I've never seen the remake. Mm-hmm. But the Sam Peckinpah movie, David Warner plays a very slow-witted kind of giant who people suspect he's hurt a child, and there's going to be a lynching, and it's Dustin Hoffman who hides him in his house, and they try to lay siege to his house one night to take him and perform, you know, vigilante justice, and that's the plot of the movie. It sounded a lot like this, actually, but this nowhere near as well executed as Straw Dogs.
He's out there again, and he's got the Williams girl.
Well, let's get down there and break it up then.
Now, what good would it do? 2 days, he'll be back again just like before.
Not this time.
He's an idiot. He can't remember. You ought to know that by now.
What'll we do then?
He's a blight. Like stinkweed and cutworm that just spray and spray to get rid of, but always keep coming back. No, I haven't changed my mind. Something's got to be done. But it has to be permanent.
Was it Charles Durning there? Wow. Like, what? Where do you get such hatred?
But he never takes off in the entire movie. He never takes off the postal worker outfit. And he's always got to wear the fucking pith helmet that came with...
He's like one part Nazi, one part Cliff Clavin. You know? It's, the entire movie. It's so bad.
I wanted to conduct an experiment. We took Cliff Clavin and Doc Hopper.
And I felt so bad for Lane Smith, because Lane Smith is an actor I've liked for years. I liked him in Lois and Clark. I liked him in V, The Final Battle.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've liked him in quite a few things. And then I see him in this, and he's just... He's Cletus. He's so horrible at this.
Well, everybody in this movie is bunking backwoods hick, man. Yeah. I mean, that's the setting.
Otis, it's happened. Bubba Ritter. He's done it.
The Williams girl?
Just like you said.
How bad?
She's dead, Otis.
And the plan was just so silly. So they're going to lynch him. He runs home, and his mother's brilliant plan is for him to... I don't know how they found the time for this. Dress him up like a scarecrow and hide him in the cornfield.
Here, take the dog. You go on ahead. Here, I've caught him, Mr. Hazelrig. You see anything?
No, I hadn't seen a thing.
They're on something here. Come on, boys, what is it? Come on, we got him now. Let's go. Let's go.
Or how the dogs know his scent.
That's
They just know.
Oh, they got a scent now.
We just keep it nearby at all times.
They have a jar of, you know, Larry Drake musk somewhere.
I was hoping that you had his hat.
You're watching something. It, you're like, can they smell the Down syndrome?
Yeah.
You're like, oh!
Wow, that's dark even for me.
I was like, holy God, that's horrible.
So they find him in the Scarecrow, and they end up shooting the fucker.
Yeah.
You know, and then they find out that the little girl that they thought was killed was really mauled by a dog. We know
the
this.
Hero. He saved her from the Labrador Retriever.
Oh, here's another one.
Exactly.
They said, oh, she's dead. Everyone was sure she was dead. Then why is it she makes complete full recovery and she's completely unharmed?
She's fine. Hey, Harley,
you out there?
Yeah, Ludy, go ahead.
Little girl's all right. It was all a mistake. Hank Renfro's dog jumped her. They've already released her from the clinic, sent her home. Funny part is, old Bubba saved her life. Ain't that a laugh?
They put a pitchfork in the corpse's hand, and they're like, yeah, we were defending ourselves. Even the prosecutor in the courtroom was like, he had a pitchfork.
Bullets in him or something like that.
By the way, for the record, that is the worst televised fictitious trial I have ever seen. Not one aspect of that trial is believable. It's like a 14-minute trial. The prosecutor's got fucking nothing.
Yeah, but the facts is like, okay, he had a pitchfork. We had to defend ourselves against this man-child with Down syndrome carrying a pitchfork dressed up like a scarecrow. You had to shoot him 28 times. Judge throws it out.
Well,
what do you know? These people are members of the community.
Yeah.
Court is adjourned.
Acquitted.
Yeah.
Right? Acquitted.
Yeah.
Acquitted.
And they come out like, oh, I'm going to have fried chicken because I just got away with fucking murder.
And the whole town accepts them, too. Like, there isn't one person casting them.
Everybody shakes their fucking hand coming out of the courtroom. I'm like, I want these four men dead.
Yeah.
But not yesterday, not 2 minutes from now. Fucking now. Kill them
now.
Not
after breakfast.
I couldn't wait for it.
Harlan?
What now?
Have you started planting?
What's the matter with you? Can't you see I'm busy? You ever see me planting this time of year?
Well, I just thought it's kind of strange. I mean, if you're not planting, why would you put up a scarecrow?
And the way in which they die, the first death is so stupid. Like, we kept looking... The logistics of it alone is staggering because, first of all, the scarecrow has, I don't think, anything to do with two of the deaths. I think they were legitimately just accidents. Because you don't see the scarecrow, and their deaths are suspicious, right? The first one, it's Lane Smith hearing a noise in his barn while he's working on a wood chipper, and he's climbing up to the loft, and he loses his balance for no apparent reason and falls into the wood chipper.
Like, but he doesn't just fall. He grabs onto the lamp and he's swinging up, and the entrance to the wood chipper is maybe about 1 by 2 feet, and he's swinging back and forth. I'm thinking to myself, okay.
Not to mention after the fact, when they go back to investigate the murder scene, I'm pretty certain that barn would be nowhere near as pristine as it was afterwards.
And then the guy that sticks himself, of all places, in the bottom of a fucking grain silo that's empty. And of course...
Locks himself in.
And then he gets locked in. And the grain takes him out.
What a slow way to die, too.
But the thing is, you never actually see...
The scarecrow.
No.
Not till the end.
You only get the hint because the little girl is telling, what's this Mr. Postman there?
I know what you did, mister.
I know what you did to Bubba. And you lied about him.
What? Where'd you hear that?
He told me. He told me everything.
Bubba didn't tell you that. Bubba didn't tell you anything. Bubba's dead.
I know.
Haley!
You know, and then all of a sudden it gets ramped up where he's killing his accomplices, right? There's only one left. And then again, I was reminded of Prometheus when he's running away from that fucking thing.
The combine.
In the cornfield. It's like, okay.
Serpentine!
Have you ever seen a combine turn?
They don't quarter so well.
No. Like, he could literally just run around, stand next to it. It would just go in circles around.
You see that combine flip up 30 degrees and make a 90-degree turn? No, that ain't gonna happen. Oh, it was so good. I'm like, he's just running in a straight fucking line.
The Prometheus school of running away from shit.
Serpentine!
At least the end of the movie gives you the scarecrow. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what supernatural hodgepodge is going on.
But it's not even like it's a guy in a suit. It's like a bad animatronic scarecrow.
Yeah.
And it's also, but it's Frankenstein, right? When the little girl has the flower for him or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, oh, come on. Yeah, it was. And knowing that Larry Drake's only in it for like 10 minutes. And
pretty much.
That's it. Then we had to sit through the entire rest of the movie and watch these jackasses just get knocked off very slowly, one by one.
Oh.
Oddly enough, I think this would have been a great movie for Sam Raimi to remake. I think he would do something with that plot. It would have been cool to see.
I agree. There's a movie called Scarecrows from 1988 that I really like. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. And I think Dark Knight of the Scarecrow deserves a hard R remake.
Absolutely.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, one of the worst slashers from the 90s.
You win some, you lose some. And now, ladies and gentlemen, you are about to experience the cutting edge of medicine. Let's open this baby up and see what it'll do.
other reason for this show is a reason to watch one of the worst horror movies that came out of the 90s.
I loved it.
Come on.
You lied, sack of shit. You told me it took you 3 consecutive nights to get through the whole thing.
Dr. Bastard. I remember seeing Dr. Giggles at the Odeon. I went to the show to fucking see this thing. I paid money to go see it on the big screen.
You didn't walk out?
No, we giggled through the whole thing, and I went, like that was fucking horrible. What the hell did we just watch?
You know what? I first heard the title, and I saw the poster for it. I thought it was a sociopath who got high on laughing gas and then killed people. That's what I thought. That's not what I got. I got something that made far less sense, if that's possible.
Check out time.
But yeah. the one reason why I enjoyed that movie, the only thing I enjoyed about that movie, was, like, I would say a solid 50 to 75% of that cast is guest starred on Star Trek.
So you guys know where to meet tonight?
8 o'clock, Breeders' Hill. A fitting name, don't you think?
You know, we might be a little bit on the tardy side.
Yeah, we're going on a little expedition.
Expedition? What, are you guys bringing tents?
No, these guys have some kind of big surprise planned.
Yeah,
Speaking of big surprises, the Twin Peaks.
10 minutes into the movie, when you first meet all the kids on campus there, I'm like, I hate all of these people. I hope they die. Every fucking one of them. I didn't like any of these characters. They're the most annoying kids.
Nick was at home watching this. He was messaging me. He's like, why? Why are you making me do this? I hate you. I hate you.
Looking for someone? Yeah, Max. I think I can help you.
And Zoe Trilling. Zoe Trilling was in that movie. Where the fuck did Zoe Trilling go? If any of our listeners, do you know where the fuck Zoe Trilling went? Because after 96, she just disappeared. You never saw her again. Night of the Demons 2. This movie.
Wait, let me get this straight. After Dr. Giggles, people's careers didn't skyrocket. Some people vanished.
The movie was directed by Manny Coto.
Find me Zoe Trilling. She did Candyman 3, Day of the Dead, disappeared. Night of the Demons 2. She was in a whole bunch of other movies. She played one with Robert Englund where he was a descendant of the Maquis de Sade. And all of a sudden, about 96, 97, she disappeared. I thought she was hot. I wanted to see more from her. Where the fuck is Zoe Trilling?
Her filmography only has 26 credits, and it stopped in 1997.
Where did she go?
OD. That's my guess. I got money on OD. Who's got
five? Find her!
$5, says she OD.
Have an accident. Probably just needs a Band-Aid.
I remember when we saw this in the theater, we were willing to give it the benefit of the doubt because there was some violence in it, and this was made in the early 90s, and the early 90s is when the MPAA was really cutting down on all the gore.
Yeah.
If you wanted an R rating, you couldn't have any gore. So this movie had the potential to be a gore fest, but they couldn't do it because the MPAA was all over the fucking shit. Not to mention that, but okay, the fucking giant Band-Aid. After the fucking giant Band-Aid, that was it.
Yeah, that was it.
Oh. It was over. I'm like, wait, okay, not only is that stupid, but where the fuck do you get one of those?
Now, how did it fit in his doctor's bag?
Fuck you, giant fucking Band-Aid.
Don't move. I don't believe you had an appointment. Get the fuck away from me. Have a heart. Shit!
At what point in the movie did I start swearing at the movie, yelling, fuck you, movie, fuck you, because I had nothing left. I had nothing. I'm like, I've endured you for an hour and a half, and this is what I get, piece of shit?
No, it was after the house exploded, and we knew that Giggles was in the basement.
Yeah.
Okay, and she's going in for surgery, and Brian is like, if this fucking guy comes back as a half-burnt-up, fucking rotting piece of shit to fucking give us one last scare, I'm going to destroy your TV. I'm trying to tie him down. So I know it's coming. And sure enough, here he comes out. He's got the bad prosthetic on. I'm like, he's kind of burnt, but don't get all weirded out.
He was like, fuck you, movie.
Fuck you! I've had enough!
It's like tied to the railway tracks, and I could see that bad movie plot coming, and I couldn't get out of the way.
Doctor in the house.
fuck you movie. Go right to hell. Don't pass go. Right to hell.
So yeah, Dr. Yankles, I mean, Larry Drake probably had his finest question mark. But it's a laugh.
What, a 12-year-old write that screenplay? How many medical puns can we come up with to kill people with?
One of the worst horror movies to come out of the 90s.
Yeah, Dr. Giggles, not our finest podcasting moment.
Dr. Giggles. Fucking not. It's not even funny. It's just sad. The whole movie is sad.
It's just bad dad puns through the whole thing.
Who greenlit this thing?
I felt sorry for Larry Drake. I did. This is a guy who won 2 Emmys by this point for his television work. And now in film, this is what he's resorted to doing. And every time he looks into a camera and delivers one of those fucking puns, I'm like, you can, if you still frame it, frame by frame, you can see the exact moment he realizes his career is over. That his life is shattered. Oh, it's so bad.
But let us get to the cream of this particular podcast, which will be Darkman, where he plays the villain, well, one of the villains anyway, the villain's henchman, right? He's the muscle in this movie.
What made it different than all the other superhero movies that were coming out at the time, because we had Batman, we'd all seen, grown up seeing Superman. This was the first time I think we'd ever seen a truly grotesque hero. I mean, you had, like, the B titles, like Toxic Avenger.
Swamp Thing. What about Swamp Thing?
I can't really think of too many others that where you had a really disgusting leading hero.
Let's consider my points. One. I try not to let my anger get the better of me. Two. I don't always succeed. Three. I've got 7 more points.
It's a fun movie, and when we were 12, 13, it was really fun. Not to mention, this was Sam Raimi. You know, he gave us Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2, and that was it. He was a producer, and he was part of a movie called Intruder, which I do believe should be a show at some time. We'll get to that another time. But then here comes this Darkman by the director of Evil Dead. This was before Army of Darkness. He gave us nothing else, so it was intriguing.
This may have been his first uplifting movie. This may have been his most joyous film at the time.
Finally, we can replace damaged skin tissue.
No, Yekatidu, no, not quite, my friend, not yet. All we've got is a piece of the puzzle. There's still a big question, how to keep the cell stable past 99 minutes in the light. But at least now we know it's all about light.
I'll get it.
This was another case where I liked Liam Neeson's character, so when they do descend on his lab there, I'm thinking, just give the guys the paper they want, you know, because it's right there. You know, how come you couldn't notice that the memorandum was on the desk before you tortured and killed these fucking people? Just leave these fine people alone. They're right there. They got this great scientific breakthrough, and you're going to fucking destroy all their work? And they just leave these fine people alone.
They're about to make a medical breakthrough to help millions of people.
We want the memorandum.
No foolish heroics, if you please. We've come only for documents. Tell us where to find the Belisarius memorandum and we shall disappear. Like a nightmare before the breaking day.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Unfortunate.
What memorandum?
Why does the memorandum exist? Is that a fair question?
I know, it's like a this bribe memo?
This was before email.
But still, why would you have any record of how much money you illegally paid to a city official?
Memo to accounting. Bribe money.
These are kickbacks, payoffs.
Swag funds.
We want the memorandum. Should your houseboy's predicament not jog your memory, you may bid him Godspeed.
This movie had my attention the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't... When it does slow down, it slows down for maybe 3 minutes at a time. That's it.
Right.
And then things are moving along, you know? Like, his place is ransacked and his assistant is ventilated.
Mm-hmm.
He's blown to fucking shit within 6 minutes!
Okay,
6 minutes!
Yeah.
Yeah, the explosion where he's propelled from the building is a bit loud.
That's great!
Again, the physics. Explosion is here, he is this way, and actually, he should have gone out the window, not directly up through the roof.
The fact that it's supposed to be a comic book, I'll give it a buy, but everyone knows that those explosions where people are propelled, your organs are oatmeal at that point. It's the blast that kills you, not the fire or the landing. But apparently this movie was a real baptism by fire for Sam Raimi. This was his first major studio production. After his success as an independent filmmaker, the studios finally came knocking on his door and offered him money to put together a project. And he originally wanted to do The Shadow, the old radio drama.
Which they did with Alec Baldwin a few years later.
And then he couldn't buy the rights to it at the time, so he then wanted to buy the rights to Batman, which wasn't with Universal, it was with Warner Brothers, so he couldn't get the rights to that either. And so he decided he was going to make his own comic book character, kind of an amalgam of all the old characters from the 30s and 40s. And he also wanted to do a movie that paid tribute to the old Universal monsters. And so a lot of the character derives from two sources, The Phantom of the Opera and Hunchback of Notre Dame.
He's got burns covering over 40% of his body. The hands and face are the most severe. 10 years ago, pain from the burns would have been intolerable. This man would have spent the rest of his life screaming. Now, we use the Rankovitz technique. Quite simply, we sever the nerves within the spinothalamic tract, there, which, as you know, transmits neural impulses of pain and vibratory sense to the brain. When the body ceases to feel, when so much sensory input is lost, the mind grows hungry. Starved of its regular diet of input, it takes the only remaining stimulation it has, the emotions, and amplifies them. Giving rise to alienation, loneliness, uncontrolled rage is not uncommon. Now surges of adrenaline flow unchecked through the body and brain, giving him augmented strength, hence the restraints.
I tell you, the makeup work on Liam Neeson was beautiful. It really was well done, because they had the bandages that were starting to get stained with blood because they were wrapped over his exposed flesh.
Yeah.
And you could see the skeletal work around his teeth.
Yeah.
Because a part of his lips were missing. You could see kind of where the jaw and the teeth were in the jawline. And it all looked really good. I mean, it was, especially growing up as a kid seeing that, it was really creeped us out.
You will provide the revenues owed to us by the time I finish this cigar.
But what about?
And actually, my big thing is because Larry Drake, up until that point, you know, at the L.A. Lodge, played, you know, someone special needs, shall we say. Do you notice that they actually made a concerted effort to actually make him have, like, a solid vocabulary?
Yeah.
He was quite loquacious in this film.
Yes.
Yeah.
We gotta do the monies that I owe to us.
Hey, take these, buddy. My name isn't Buddy. It's Durant.
Robert G. Durant. I just laughed. For some reason, I laughed at that part.
It's like the best possible frame job, right? It's so good.
How many times do I have to tell you I was nowhere near any convenience store, you nitwit?
I just noticed this evening watching this film is that Larry Drake has a rather severe crossed eye.
Yeah.
He's got a lazy eye. Yeah, he does. Which just further adds to his kind of duh look, you know what I mean? How the fuck did he get this job?
Right.
You know, like, I'm not saying he didn't do a good job. I like the character.
Yeah.
And now that I've seen the movie, I wouldn't want anyone else to play Robert Durant.
No, he is perfect
at it. But how the fuck did he get the job?
Well, yeah, I don't know how he got cast, but especially as in a villain role when he's never done anything of that sort to this point, right? Up to this point, he was a lovable TV character.
The pink elephant, please.
I'm sorry, buddy. It don't count unless you're behind the line.
What? I was behind the line.
Not hard.
I was standing right here with my girlfriend. Now, the pink elephant, if you please.
No way.
I can only imagine how many times they were set up where Sam Raimi's got like a camera coming in and out of him. It's like, okay, now be like this. Because there's a lot of that in this movie, man. Rage.
Acting! They're shoving him face first into the glass display.
Oh, yeah, snap!
You see the bend. It's like, oh, Stretch Armstrong.
Take the fucking elephant!
Take it now! Take it! Take the fucking elephant!
Take it! You fucking bitch! Take the elephant and rage! Start with rage!
Please, no! Forgive me!
Oh god, they're running away. That was like the most surreal moment in the film. Him running away into the building, holding a pink elephant with smoke coming off of his head.
And this music is fucking Batman.
Yeah.
This music is Batman.
You say Elfman, Batman, I say Dick Tracy. You know?
It's like, say what you will about Danny Elfman, especially with all the Tim Burton stuff, but he is particularly one note. It's the same shit over and over again, that like that bombastic, the drum, the bass beats, the tubas.
Right. Well, because if you listen to Danny Elfman, he loved Golden Age Hollywood stuff. He liked big musical numbers. He was all about
John orchestration Williams, all over the top. Like, just that really kicked up, you know, boom, 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 boom.
I destroy to build something better! Whereas you're a man who destroys for revenge! Look about you. It's all mine. Because I built it! I built it all!
Of course, the corporate villain, right? There's always the corporate villain at the end.
But the Ronnie Cox.
Yeah, Ronnie Cox of the movie. I did like the fact that he had that history on the high beams, and setting it in that area was a pretty cool finale.
We begin instruction on Delta City.
I wanted to see more Gru and villain deaths. If we're going to make the character that hideous, and we're going to drop the F-bomb enough to give this an R rating, then why didn't we have more violent deaths for each of the villains? They even set up the rebar at the end at the bottom of the construction site, but we don't get the impalement.
Yeah.
That's just cheating. That's not fair at all.
I think, the one thing that kind of hurt this movie is that it came after things like Predator and Batman. You know what I mean? It was in the shadow of a lot of really great late 80s action films.
And the tone of Batman is more serious, and it works. And when you put it in Batman's shadow, this comes across as a lot sooner.
Mm-hmm.
When you retrieved my memorandum, you failed to excise the good doctor.
He's extinct. I saw to it myself.
He's alive. I don't like loose ends, Robert. Finish it.
Night of the Scarecrow. Let's score that one. Brian Simpson.
Taking his limitations in mind, I'd probably give it a 6 for the idea.
Oh my god! You scored that well.
I know!
You have to. If we went back in time to that place and I was a kid, like if I was that age again and I was 6 or 7 years old watching that on like ABC, it would creep me out. It would actually be frightening.
Who do you think you are? The only thing official you ever done is lick stamps. Now get off my place!
Nick?
Oh, that bitch is getting a 1.
A 1? For Night of the Scarecrow?
Oh, hell yeah.
Ooh, I don't think anything's gotten a 1. Don't watch it. Nick McPherson says, don't watch that film. It sucks.
You can watch it. I just recommend you're either hammered or stoned when you do so.
In a pig's eye. I don't believe it.
It was a Hanna-Barbera horror. You know what I mean? It was a fucking Scooby-Doo horror. That was
right.
Yeah.
So, because I like how they cornered him and that... There is a scene of drama where he's looking in the mask and he sees that there's eyes in there.
Right.
And he knows, he's like, okay, get back. We got our guy right here. And the guy, Larry Drake, knows he's found out. And now he starts pleading for his life. It wasn't me. I didn't do anything. Boom, 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 boom. For those reasons, I'll give it a 3.5.
Get ready to take your medicine, Morai. The doctor is in.
Yes, okay, Dr. Giggles.
Zero. It's fucking zero.
Zero?
Utterly zero.
If he could go minus 3, he would.
If I could go minus 10, can we do like plus 10, minus 10?
No, we'll give you zero. You hate
it. Fucking zero.
You hate it. Like,
not just zero, fucking zero.
I know. It sucks.
Cold sensation.
Pardon the pun, but I did get a giggle out of it.
I will kill you. I swear to God. So bad.
I'm gonna give Dr. Giggles like a 3.5.
3.5?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a good thing I make house calls.
Dr. Giggles, I'll give it a 2. I will give it a 2. Don't watch it. Okay, so Night of the Scarecrow, we can't recommend.
No.
Dr. Giggles, I mean, unless you can turn it into some sort of laughing party
drinking game.
Yes.
Oh. Every time you get a cheesy doctor pun, you have to do a shot.
Or every time he giggles.
Does the name Robert Durant mean anything to you?
Let us score Darkman, Brian Stewart.
Oh, okay, Darkman. With the exception of the ham-fisted plot points, which were so over the top and silly, and yes, I know it's supposed to be a comic book movie, but the screenplay could have been a little smarter, and it did definitely go through writing hell. You had, what, 5 or 6 screenwriters trying to get this thing done?
Yeah.
For those reasons, it's going to be a lower mark than expected, but it's still a fun movie, and I still enjoyed it, so it's going to get a 7.
That would be...
just fine.
Cult sensation.
All right. I really liked this movie. You know, it was a product of early 90s technology. And it's a Raimi film. I have very, you know, like childhood fondness attached to this film. So I'm going to give it an 8.
Son of a bitch, Westlake malfunctioned my helicopter. He's a cockroach. You think you kill him, and he pops up someplace else.
I like the cameo at the end by Bruce Campbell. That was a nice touch.
Yeah.
I like seeing the cameo of the car during the helicopter chase. I liked the villains. I liked the disfigured hero, which was very different.
The effects. Like, the prosthetics on his face
are beautiful.
That's the only effect in this movie that held up is those prostheses.
Even like, in high def.
Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're never bored. I'll give it a 7. And Larry Drake, I mean, you know what? The fact that he was a villain in this and we bought him as the villain, even though he had a few shortcomings, I wanted to see more from this guy. It's a shame that he was out of the business by 2009 and that he's now gone. And that concludes the Darkman Night of the Giggling Scarecrow, featuring Larry Drake. We knew after recording this session that this episode was going to be full of laughs and much different than our other shows. I think this was the first time we actually spent more time shredding a movie rather than promoting it. We hope you enjoyed the change of pace. Earlier in the podcast, I mentioned that Sam Raimi had only directed Evil Dead 1 and 2 before Darkman, and that is false. He also helmed a very obscure comedy called Crime Wave in 1985, starring Louise Lasser and Brian James. Be sure to keep your eyes open for John Carpenter's Lost Themes 2. It's available April 15th. You can pre-order it now. For the world-famous Brian Stewart and the cult sensation Nick McPherson, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you, and it might not be Dr. Giggles, but we're certainly going to keep helping you find it right here at Horror 101, educating your fears.
Just keep them out of my hair.
Hey, where you going?
Hong Kong restaurant, fast.